Welcome to the Faith Together podcast. It is good to have you with us today. Thank you for joining us. As we continue our series on living out the Shema, and we are on the section of that task on focusing on living out the Shema at home. And I am Leon, and I'm with Lindsay today. Hi, Lindsay.
Hey, Leon. Hey, everybody. Great to be back together.
Yes, it is. And hopefully joining us again, you're probably getting tired of us saying hello to each other and to you and telling you who we are. But we're finding we're getting new listeners all the time.
We
and
are.
We're excited about that.
So we don't want anyone to feel left out.
That's right.
Yeah.
So thank you for all for joining us again. And as we get started, we want to remind you about the survey we are doing on our website. Do you remember this?
Yes. This is Lindsay? Very exciting.
Yeah. So we have a 3-question survey, which is probably the shortest survey you will ever take in your life. And I suspect that the prize for doing that 3-question survey may be one of the best prizes for a 3-question survey ever.
It is a really sweet prize. You and your family can win a $50 Fandango gift card to go to the movies, right, Leon?
Right. And then, of course, what are the movies without snacks?
Oh, my goodness. You got to have popcorn. And I must say, the M&Ms with your popcorn.
And there's something about, like, when I think of the movies, I think of jujubes. I don't even know what those are.
What? Yes, I don't even know either.
But I don't know why jujubes. I think of those jujubes. Is that an old thing? Is that going to the drive-in or something?
Well, I've Did been those to exist? A drive-in theater. Yeah. Yeah. When I was in, let's see, maybe late high school, we had one just on the like exterior of our town.
Okay.
You had to drive about 20 minutes to get there, but they would do a double feature.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You could go and get, you know, all your snacks.
Yeah. So growing up in California, we would go to the drive-in quite a bit. Eventually, you could put the sound from the movie in your through your radio in your car. But prior to that, which kind did you have? Prior to that, you would have this external speaker that you would hang on your window.
Yeah,
it never gave good sound, but it was the way it was.
Okay, so our drive-in is called the Vandell Drive-In. They did have those speakers, but then they took them away. And so by the time I started going, we would just tune our radio, and that's how we heard.
Okay.
So right. I'm looking up jujubes on Google right now.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to share with you, Leon, but jujubes have been discontinued. Yeah.
Does it say what they were?
It says it kind of looked like they look like dots, like, you know, the dots candy. Kind of like, no, not the Dippin' Dots, but like the gummies.
Oh.
Yes, like gummy bears, but they're like little dots.
Okay.
Put them on like gingerbread houses at Christmas time.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes.
Okay. So it says,
yeah, that's ringing a bell with me. I must have had some of those when I was a kid. I don't know why that's in my brain.
Oh, and it says you would get them at the movie theater.
There you go.
I had to look this up.
How did we get so sidetracked? Oh, because we're giving away.
Yes.
We're giving away a gift card to the movies. And maybe you can find a theater that has jujubes if you're the winner. So we have a $50 Fandango card and then a $50 Visa card for all the snacks and fixins and all that stuff. Because you're going to need that much if you go to the theater today.
It's pricey.
Oh, yes, it is.
Very pricey. And there's a lot of great things out at the movies right now for families. So we're just really excited to give this away.
Yeah, and so we're going to encourage you to go to our website, centerff.com. is our website, and fill out answer those 3 questions for us. That will actually help us as we continue to provide podcast material, and that drawing will take place with that winner on March 1st.
Yeah, so here in just a couple more weeks.
Yeah,
and so don't forget, like, on our social media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, share the contest and share the survey with some of your friends, tag them in it, so then it can spread more of the news of Faith Together and give more people a chance to spend a night with their family at the movies.
Yes, that would be great. Okay, Lindsay, so we're talking about mealtime today.
Yes, mealtime.
Such an important time in the life of the family. And so I was just doing a little investigating, and I thought, you know, some crazy things happen at mealtime. I'm wondering if there's any funny stories out there that I could find. And I found these funny tweets that parents have put up about things that happen at mealtime. I thought it would be fun for us to share them with our audience. Okay? All right. Here's the first one. You could make dinner for a toddler, or you could just cut out the middleman and throw away the plate of food and squirt ketchup on the dog.
That's pretty much it, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, here's another one. Me, before I had kids, my kids will eat what I put in front of them. Me this week, peeling the bread off of Wendy's chicken nuggets because it's too spicy, so the 3-year-old will eat it. You learn, you change.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, another one. From the son, what's for dinner? Me. Fish. He screams, starts hyperventilating, loses all control, begins to break from reality. And then the son suddenly stops and says, wait, have I ever had fish?
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one is, when my daughter asks me how much more dinner she needs to eat to get dessert, I like to answer in abstract quantities, like the average weight of joy or 7 sunsets, to teach her that life often doesn't make sense. And also, quit sassing me and eat your peas, kid. So good.
Yeah. Family dinners are fun because we start out as a family of 6, and then after everyone gets in trouble for acting up, it's dinner for 2.
Oh, we've all been there. Yes. My 6-year-old takes an average 14 years to finish his dinner.
Okay, here's a parent mealtime hack. It's chicken. Seriously, no matter what it is, just call it chicken. You know what? We did that with our kids with fish.
You did? With your girls?
We would just tell them it was chicken.
That's perfect. Oh my gosh. Kid questions at lunch, like, why is milk white? And why do chickens have fingers? Are adorable and also surprisingly effective birth control.
Oh, goodness.
So fun.
Wow.
Mealtime. You just never know what's going to happen at mealtime.
Never know what's going to happen. But it is such an important time. And I think maybe one of the things that's become common in America these days is to not have mealtime together.
Right. Fast food. Grab and go.
We're on our way to piano lessons. We're on our way to soccer practice. We're on our way to church. We've got lots to do. We're tired. It's easier to sit in front of the television and eat together, and everybody just kind of
zones out. Yep. Right. And even I've noticed, you know, Leon, I love traveling to Walt Disney World, one of my favorite places to go.
I know that.
And I am always someone who, you know, when people are traveling there, I give tips and help them kind of know what to expect. And Disney has done this thing lately where, they have these quick service meal plans. So what that means is families can prepay for all their food, which is very convenient. And you can go to a counter service restaurant, which means it's like fast food. So you go up, you order what you want, and you just eat it like at stand-up tables or just real quick, like fast food sort of areas. And it was funny. Maybe about a month ago, there was a family traveling on their vacation, and she called me on the second day, and she said, hey, can we switch our meal plan to a regular dining plan? Because what I'm finding, and I had suggested this to her, was, you know, sitting down at a restaurant with your family gives you a little bit more time, helps you to kind of reset for your day. And she's like, that was really good time for us together, and I want to keep doing that.
Wow.
So I think even that, we see kind of this Americanized, you know, eat and go happening even on people's vacations when you're supposed to be connecting with each other, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Lindsay, one of the things that we have been intentional about doing as we look at each of these subjects that we're talking about is, what does Scripture even address this? Does Scripture have something to say about it?
What does the Bible say about
mealtimes? And sometimes the Bible doesn't talk like directly like this is what you should do, but rather we see models of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I've discovered as I did a bit of study on this is kind of the importance of mealtime in the Jewish tradition. In the biblical tradition, mealtime was a time for intimacy, a time for fellowship, and a time for significant conversation. Even like the way that the meal was laid out. So they would not sit at a table in chairs like we think about it. In fact, they probably didn't even really have tables in most homes like we think about it. They would have like a rug or a cloth of some kind that they would mm-hmm. sit on the floor, and that would be their designated table.
Yeah.
And they would sit on the floor, usually with pillows or something, around this table.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I was reading this morning in the book of Matthew about Jesus reclining at the tables. In preparation of this episode, I was just reading some different excerpts of Jesus at the table. And I thought it was interesting that they used that word reclining, that yeah. there really was like this restful, not rushed posture
yeah.
that he had with others at the table.
Right. Yeah. And oftentimes when we find Jesus, we find him in intimate situations at a table. And so we'll talk about that in just a moment. But
yeah.
it seems like for the Jewish community, the time that community was being built among people was as much, if not more, of a focus than actually kind of meeting the hunger needs. Obviously, we have to eat because we're hungry. But for them, the hunger was almost an excuse to be able to be together, to share life together. And so food becomes then a symbol of community. So if you want to be close to someone, you have a meal with them. And we see that in multiple stories within the Bible. So I immediately thought of the story of Zacchaeus, where Jesus says, "Zacchaeus, come down, for I'm going to your house today, and we're going to have a meal together." And mm-hmm. one of the things that the religious leaders were critical of Jesus about was the fact that he would dare eat with sinners mm-hmm. and tax collectors. And the reason that was such a big deal is because eating a meal was a sacred moment. It was a
right.
holy moment. And you do not share that with people who are mm-hmm. sinners.
Right.
And so we see this being modeled here. I think about the two men on the road to Emmaus after Jesus' resurrection, when they don't recognize who he is until they sit down to have a meal. And Jesus breaks the bread, blesses it, and all of a sudden they recognize who he is. The significance of that meal, those two men not even knowing who he is, don't want him to leave. They want him to come with them and come eat with them.
Right.
And so again, the mealtime becomes significant. You mentioned the reclining, which is very common in the Passover meal.
Yes.
In fact, there's a part in that celebration where a child asks, "Why do we recline today, unlike the way we recline on every other day?" To kind of signify the significance of the Passover meal compared to other meals. But still, the reclining becomes a significant image for us. Not that we have to recline when we eat at our tables, of course, because we're going to eat at a table in chairs. But the concept, the intent behind the just chilling, relaxing,
right,
being together, sharing life, telling stories, we're not in a hurry, which I think for most families, to think about mealtime not being in a hurry is a bit of an oxymoron.
Right.
For most of us, I don't think we know how to have a meal without being in a hurry.
I would agree.
So another one of those examples from Scripture would be the feeding of the 5,000. What does Jesus do? He provides them a meal. And I can almost envision that the teaching probably stopped at that point.
Yeah.
When the fish and the bread are being delivered. And I suspect that the people there got in these little groups where they ate together. I doubt that it was everybody get their own food and then just eat by themselves, because that would have been so inconsistent for who they were as a people.
Yeah.
So a recent Barna study shared something that I thought was very interesting. They said that spiritually vibrant families shared one thing in common that they do together. It was a long list of all kinds of options, but the one thing that stood out to Barna in the research was that spiritually vibrant families share loud tables.
I love that.
And I thought, okay, that's probably the typical American household. When they eat together, it's usually a fairly loud experience. People are talking, especially if you have quite a few children or people in your home.
Right.
You're going to share life together in those loud moments that they're together.
And the community portion of that time together becomes more valuable than the actual meal.
Yes, that's right. And I think, like, you know, maybe the closest we get to this for many of our families would be Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we prepare this great meal. We spend sometimes days preparing this meal. We gather around the table. We do our thing. And for families that are not real formal about this, it's get up, hang out for a little while, maybe come back, eat a little bit more.
Right.
The food stays out for most of the day. You go and you watch a little bit of football, then you come back and grab some more to eat. And there's this sense of just being together during that day.
Yeah. I think a little bit about my experience this school year here at Olivet as a resident director. We host at our home what we call Soup Sundays. And so every Sunday night, we have soup. We just make two big crock pots of soup and invite all the girls over. And it was interesting. Last week, we ran out because so many of the girls were coming. And like three girls came in and we had run out of soup. And I said, I am so sorry, but I'll fix you a salad. You know, I was telling them different things I could fix them, you know, as they're coming in. And you know, we've got all these girls everywhere and they're just, you talk about a loud table, Leon. It's loud.
Yeah, I
okay?
bet.
And so they come in and those three girls said, no, actually, we're not really hungry. We just wanted to come hang out.
Oh, yeah.
And there it is, right?
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you didn't have somebody standing by that could turn water into soup.
I know. That's
when you said that you ran out, I immediately thought about the wedding
water
feast.
To wine, yeah. I know. That's so good. Yeah. That's so good. Anyway, I took us off script. Sorry.
But no, that's
it
good.
It just reminded me
no,
of that.
I'm
like,
glad you did.
Of their response. Like, no, we just wanted to be here. Like, oh.
Yeah. And that's really, I think, what a meal is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about sharing life together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think you know that I spend parts of my summers in Tanzania, Africa.
Yes.
I usually take a group of students from Olivet. In fact, we are having a meal together tonight.
Ooh,
our
exciting.
Team is. Every Thursday night we meet for a meal to share life together before we go on this.
That's
what,
so
what
important.
What can be a difficult trip at times.
Yeah.
And
what a beautiful way to prepare it, together.
It's great. It just dawned on me that that's what we were doing. I mean, I knew we were preparing, but I wasn't thinking about the meal part
mm-hmm.
in conjunction with what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the reasons I love going to Tanzania are the things that I learn from them. And one of the things that I learned from them is about the way they approach community. And I want to just share one picture that stands out in my mind. It had been a long day of serving at a church in a village.
Okay.
Often referred to as the bush.
Okay.
But it was a village kind of out in a remote area, and they were going to serve us a very late lunch. They eat when the food is ready, not when it comes 12 o'clock or 5 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, so it's a much more flexible
schedule. Very much so. And this lunch was probably about 3 o'clock in the afternoon by the time we got there for it, so we were quite hungry. And they had chairs, kind of those plastic chairs that we have like at the side of a pool or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they had plastic chairs like that around underneath a mango tree. So if you can just envision this on dirt.
Okay.
Underneath a mango tree. So we're protected from the hot sun, the Jongo Jingye,
okay,
the very hot sun.
Wow,
as they say in Swahili, we're being served there. We're kind of in a big circle, and we're being served there. And as I'm watching, everybody's just chilling.
Huh.
I mean, we've been going strong all day, and now everybody's just calm. Now, my instinct after we were eating was to look at my watch and think, okay, it's time for us to get back to what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And what I began to realize is they had no concern about that whatsoever.
Hmm.
We are here together. We're sharing life together. We're enjoying the goodness of God. We're enjoying the relief from the heat under this tree. Why would we be in a hurry to go anywhere else?
Yeah.
And it's such a refreshing approach in a world where we're constantly watching our watches.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that so true? Anytime we're in an environment where you're really welcomed to just be, it's so life-giving and so refreshing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's one more thing I want to share before we get into some real practical application that we can share with our listeners.
Yes, I'm excited about our practical takeaways.
Yeah, I came across a paper written in 2012 by Rebecca Katz, and it was her capstone thesis project for the honors program that she was in at Western Kentucky University. And it caught my attention because it had to do with sharing meals together. And she was actually doing research on this. And I pulled out a portion of her abstract. For those who aren't familiar with that, at the beginning of a dissertation or a thesis project, you summarize basically the focus of your paper in a abstract. And so this is a portion of her abstract. Sharing a meal is a simple yet sacred occasion. It is a universal act that is important to building relationships within people groups. Intentionally eating together creates time and space to engage in the spiritual and intellectual levels that are unique to human beings. Sharing food cultivates community because the implications of the meal extend beyond the time of eating together. While there are other places people meet, gathering around a meal is the most accessible because, if nothing else, everyone must eat. I thought that was really, really interesting. And to my knowledge, she is not a Christian. This is not a Christian university. I mean, I suppose she could be a Christian. But just the fact that she recognizes both the spiritual and the intellectual levels that are impacted by eating a meal together, I thought was significant.
Yeah, I love the word cultivate. Cultivates community, you know, just by being together and sharing that meal. That's a very powerful word description of what mealtime can be.
Yeah.
And I think in our Western world, in our American culture, we can just get so caught up in our schedules, our times, and not remember why mealtimes are there for us. They're there for us to not just nourish our bodies, but to nourish our souls, to nourish our minds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then meals can become, or really are, sacred events.
They are.
And that's part of what we want to help. That's part of what we want to share today, is that they are sacred events and that we live in a world that is doing everything it can to compete with those events. So our extracurriculars, having a meeting that runs late or I have to go early for a meeting, our television, even church can interrupt the normal routine of gathering together for meals. And so I think what we want to encourage parents to do is to plan one meal a day where you're all together.
Yes.
And so one of the things we're going to do is we're going to talk now about some practical takeaways.
Yeah.
That maybe some things that we've discovered or we've learned from other people that might be helpful in a real practical way.
Yes, because we know meals are sacred, but they don't have to be complicated. I think they can be sacred and still be simple.
Sure. You know, so macaroni and cheese.
Yes.
With the powder cheese, not with the real cheese, because kids won't eat that stuff.
It can
be a meal, right?
Right. And, it can. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times it can be a meal to pick up the deli, you know, rotisserie chicken and bring it home and dish it out on plates with some veggies and, you know, some water and call it done. But it doesn't have to be complicated. And so some practical takeaways, I've been talking with just some different families that I get to serve with at Gathering Point about their meal times and what it looks like for them. And I have a couple different examples. The first one is Josh and Jill. They're the parents, and then their two girls, Grace and Noelle. They actually give Grace and Noelle a meal to plan each week. So the girls know they get to go and go grocery shopping for the items that they need in their meal, and they get to prepare it. And of course, their parents help them prepare it, but it's something that they all look forward to, because not only are they sharing the actual meal together and having conversation together, and we'll talk a little bit more about that conversation, but they actually get to prepare it together, which is really sweet.
That's a great idea. It changes the dynamics quite a bit,
I would
imagine.
Yeah.
And they're obviously much more invested in the experience.
Yeah, they are. And it just prepares the way for the mealtime to be that much more intentional, you know, that they're taking the time to prepare for it. So, and it's always good to give our kids ownership and responsibility and let them, you know, try some new things that they maybe wouldn't have tried before.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Like another family that we've gotten to know well, and we've actually shared several meals with them, Mike and Tiffany and their three kids, Mikey, Sam, and Emily. They love to share kind of how their day went. So what are their highs and their lows? What are their, you know, the things that are kind of bummers that have happened, but the things that have been some of the best things that have happened in their day, and just a time to go around and just connect from one family member to the other. So enjoying the meal, but also being intentional of, okay, what was a good thing that happened today? A high you had today? What was a low you had today? Just to have a touch point with everybody.
Yeah, I like that. So let's talk about some real practical ways to do that.
Yeah.
Because trying to get your kids to talk about their day at the table can be a difficult thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when our oldest, so there are 7 years between our youngest and our oldest. And I remember when our oldest was off, you know, going to school, and she would come home and do her thing, and then we'd have our meals together. And then I remember asking her, like, how was your day? And you know what the kid answer to that question is, right?
Fine.
Good. And so then I would keep asking these questions. Well, my wife picked up much quicker than I did that we were asking the wrong kinds of questions. And so there are those yes, no answer questions. And then there's what we call open-ended questions.
Yes.
Right? Where you say, tell me about your math experience today or your math class today.
Mm-hmm.
That can't be answered with a yes or no. It requires a conversation.
Yep.
Okay. Tell me about. And I like the idea. Tell me one good thing that happened today, one thing you were sad about or didn't go mm-hmm. well for you. I think that's what you said this family does, the ups and the downs.
Yeah, the ups, the downs, the highs, the lows, the best, the bummers, whatever you want it to
be. Yeah, so kids have lots to share.
Oh, yeah.
And so we need to give them opportunities to be able to do that where we are not distracted and they are not distracted. In a future episode, we're going to be talking about bedtime, and that's also another good time for kids to kind of be open to share. But in order for us to be able to listen well to those stories that they tell us, I want to propose one more thing.
Yes.
And that is,
I think I know what it
you
is.
You think you know where I'm going?
Uh-huh.
Where do you think?
No phones.
Yes, no phones. And not just like no phones being viewed at the time, but just don't bring them to the table.
Right. I have heard families having an actual box or container for phones that they go into before dinner.
I know it's funny. Our youth group at church does that.
Okay.
Our youth pastor has a box that they put all their phones in when they come into the youth department.
Yeah.
So that they can be focused throughout the time together.
Yeah.
And I think what that's saying to our kids is what they have to say to us is valuable. We're not going to be distracted by anything else.
That's right.
So I think that would be a great
and that you can
pattern.
Survive, you know, a half an hour without your phone.
Right.
It's possible. Right. It's possible. So I think all of those are really good takeaways. Another thing that I found is helpful is if you have younger ones, placemats that maybe have some interactive pieces to them are always a good way to bring them to the table that they look forward to coloring on a placemat or doing a little challenge, you know, whether it's a puzzle or a color by number or whatever it might be, fill in the blank sort of.
And those don't have to be, I mean, you don't have to spend a lot of money on those.
No.
So one of the things that we did at church that I thought would be perfect for this is we did this years ago where we took, what would it be, 11 by 17 mm-hmm. size paper.
Yep.
And we divided up into squares.
Uh-huh.
And each square had a different phrase on it.
Okay.
And it was in relation to what they learned in church that day. So this would have been for some free time that they had after our lesson time.
Okay.
So like one of them would say something like, what was new or interesting from the story today?
Okay.
And they could draw in that box.
Oh.
Or what made you ask questions from the story you learned today? And so it was just kind of an interactive kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was laminated so that they could use either dry erase markers
yep.
or crayons on it, and then it would erase off.
Yes, Leon, great minds think alike.
Yeah.
I've done something similar.
Oh, have you?
I have.
And then we sent those home with the families mm-hmm. and said, make these placemats at your kids' table, and you can use these as discussion starters for what they learned at church this past week.
Yeah.
And so you can even begin drawing things out of them that they learned at church.
In years past, my preschool ministries, I've made sure we laminate an 11 by 17 flyer, so to speak, that talks about our Bible verse for the month and same kind of things.
Okay.
Open-ended questions, fun little picture activity or game that they can play together. And we would send those home laminated and families loved them.
Yeah. And speaking of games, I'm not going to propose any particular game,
mm-hmm.
but I noticed in just doing a real simple search on the internet of family games to be done at mealtime that there's all kinds of ideas of just goofy, fun things you can do, certain questions you can ask. If you were an animal, what animal would you be? Why would you be it?
Right.
You know, and let everybody share. There's just all kinds of things that you can do to have discussions over the dinner table. And it may not feel like in the moment that anything significant is taking place, but what is happening is the family is being nurtured,
right?
There's brought
attachment.
Together. Yes,
healthy attachment.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And we talked about attachment earlier and how important that is.
Yeah, and I talked a little bit about my soup sundaes earlier. We've included games in our soup sundaes where I'll just toss out a few games, put them in the middle of the table, and if you know, just kind of see what happens. And that has brought a lot of conversation to the table that would have never come before. So I think it's a great way to break the ice. If mealtimes are a new thing for your family to have together, you know, having a fun activity that everybody is looking forward to always helps. So.
Yeah. And this is a great time to do some of the things that seem maybe a little old fashioned that maybe have gotten away from a lot of our families. Things like helping set the table together.
Right.
Helping clear the table together, that no one leaves the table until everybody's done eating. Mm-hmm. We're doing this together as a family, not a bunch of individuals that happen to be sitting at the table eating their own meals and then going on their way. And, you know, even as I say that, I feel like this comes across as scolding for people who aren't doing this. That's not our intent.
Oh, no.
Our intent here is to give helpful tools that could be implemented at one level or another in families that aren't doing some of these things to be more intentional about really helping develop faith within your kids.
Absolutely. And let's think about, I guess this is my pastoral heart, but when you think about where we will be one day in eternity, it tells us, you know, in scripture that we will have a wedding feast with Jesus. We'll all be at a table, Leon. I mean, it is such a beautiful picture of how God has created us to connect with one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we hope that in our conversation, there's been one or two tidbits that you could take and say, oh, we'll try that and see if that works. And if nothing else, that you just move away from having a meal in front of the television and moving to a table where you can share life together.
Yes.
And that's so important.
It is. It is. And I know our episode before this one was on prayer. And the meal times, the table is a perfect time to pray together as a family too.
Right. So far in this at-home part of our series, we have talked about prayer and the importance that plays. And now meal time.
Yep. And storytelling.
And storytelling. Yes, that's right. The importance of storytelling. And then eventually we're going to talk about bedtime.
Yes.
But before that, we're doing something special next week, aren't we?
We are. We are. So we have a friend of mine that's going to be a special guest with us next week, Leon. Her name is Rachel, and she and her husband own a farm here in Kankakee County called Locavore Farms. And their passion is gathering community around the table. And not only sharing delicious farm fresh food together, but sharing community, sharing meaningful moments, and sitting in the creation that God has made.
Yeah. So if I understand this correctly, it's not just that they're selling their crops so that families can eat together. They actually provide on their farm a place for people to come and have
A meal. They do.
And is it outside?
It is. Yeah. They have a couple different venues. One is inside should the weather not cooperate, but I believe they always default to outside if the weather works for them. And it is a beautiful farm. I've been privileged to go and have a meal there. And a lot of people from the suburbs and from the city come down here and bring teams, bring their own families, and they set up a table that we'll hear more from her, the exact dimensions, but it's got to be at least 20 to 30 feet long in their farmland, and everyone just gathers around. It's just beautiful. They have just a passion for community and coming around the table. And so I thought she would be a great guest for us just to lean into this topic a little bit more. And how God brought their journey to this place, but also how they see God using their ministry of Locavore Farms in the lives of families.
Wow. So. Well, I'm excited to hear that next week.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up this episode today, we want to thank you for being with us. We also want to remind you about the survey that we're doing, centerff.com is where you can find it. And then share, if you would help us share our information, this podcast and others on all of your social media, that would really help to get the word out. We're just trying to help as many people as we can to faithfully pass their faith to their children. Everything that we're hearing from both the research and from people personally is that we want to do this. We just need some help to know how.
Yeah.
And that's the purpose of this. One of the great things for me, Lindsay, is as a grandpa, my kids are grown now and out of the house, but I have grandkids and I'm learning a lot from our research and our conversations that we're having so that I can be a better grandpa.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And next week, I get to spend some extended time with them down in Kentucky, which I'm really excited about.
I'm excited about that, too, because you always come back with the best stories. So.
They're such great kids.
I'm looking forward to hearing.
So, Cooper and Zoe, if you're listening, Papa's coming soon. All right. So, thank you again for joining us. May the Lord bless you, keep you, and give you peace. You've been listening to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. Sign up for additional resources at centerff.com. When building faith, we are better together.